The Cambridge Tech Podcast is supported by Rathbones, a leading provider of individual wealth management services to private clients, entrepreneurs, charities, and professional partners. For more information, please visit rathbones.com. The value of your investments and the income from them may go down as well as up, and you could get back less than invested.
Welcome to the Cambridge Tech Podcast, talking all things technology from the heart of the UK's tech capital. Here are your hosts, Faye Holland and James Parton.
Hi, I'm Faye.
And I'm James. So let's jump straight into this week's Cambridge Tech News in partnership with Business Weekly. First up, SuperSharp Space Systems, a University of Cambridge spin-out, has secured more than £2 million in projects to develop innovative space telescopes designed to capture ultra-high resolution images of the Earth's surface. These have the ability to resolve individual buildings and capture entire cities in a single pass. The technology can unlock several climate change applications, including detecting heat stress in agriculture and monitoring urban heat loss at an individual building level. Arm, who are a regular in these tech news roundups, is supporting an historic AI initiative in the US and Japan. Arm CEO Rene Haas believes the initiative could have a huge boost for the advancement of AI technology. Corporate supporters include Arm, SoftBank, Nvidia, Amazon, Microsoft, and a consortium of nine Japanese companies. Cambridge's cluster of world-class quantum computing companies have also been alerted to opportunities in Japan this week. The Japanese quantum market is tipped to be worth up to $1.74 billion by 2032. Whilst Japan was at the forefront of quantum computing in the late 1990s, it has fallen behind in recent years, and the Japanese government is now investing heavily to catch up. This is creating significant opportunities for UK firms to work with Japanese companies to bridge the gap. Newly created Japanese quantum innovation hubs are promoting global partnerships, for instance, in technology licensing, joint product development, and other collaborative initiatives. And finally, this week, pioneering data management company SimSage is targeting a fast launch into the US. SimSage is currently closing a £1.5 million seed raise to enable faster expansion into the States through both direct and channel sales partnerships. Okay, that's the end of the news this week, so let's quickly cover two events happening right now. Local product development company Springboard's startup grant for 2024 is now open for entries. They are offering a free project worth up to $20,000 for a promising new startup developing a medical device or life science technology product. Entries should be received by the 31st of May 2024, and you can visit springboard.pro to learn more, or also check out the show notes where we will link to the startup grant page. Finally, a quick reminder that the Cambridge Software Crafters Meetup is gathering at the Bradfield Centre on the 16th of April. Now, you may have heard the Rathbones ad, which opened today's episode, and we're very excited to have Rathbones join the show as a supporter. So to learn a little bit more about Rathbones, I recently met with Paola Canuna, who leads the Rathbone Inspire program for entrepreneurs. So we're very excited that Rathbones Investment Management are coming on board as a sponsor of the podcast. Paola, lovely to meet you. Perhaps we could start with a little bit about your background.
Hello, James. Hello, everyone. Delighted to be here. My name is Paola Cuneo. I run the entrepreneurs engagement at Rathbones. And as part of it, I run a community of founders and business owners called the Rathbones Inspire. I've been working with founders and entrepreneurs for over 10 years. Before Rathbones, I was at the London Stock Exchange at Elite, a community of private companies.
Excellent. So it sounds like you've got a rich history there. Why don't you tell us a little bit more about Rathbones itself for those that haven't come across you before?
Rathbones is a wealth management and financial planning company. It was founded in 1742 in Liverpool. And nowadays, following the combination with Investec Wealth UK, we are managing over 100 billion of assets. We do work closely with entrepreneurs and founders at all different stages of their journey. That means we can also work with our professional advisors and help them to structure their assets in the best way for the future. So we don't only work with founders when they sold their business, but we find that the earlier we can be involved in the discussions, the more we can help.
Fabulous. So as I said, we're very excited to have Rathbones Investment Management join Cambridge Tech Podcast as a sponsor. Why do you think that's a good fit for you?
Our history is rooted in innovation and entrepreneurship. We Rathbone Inspires, we do work closely with entrepreneurs and we support their growth journey. And in addition, we have an office in Cambridge for over 20 years. We are working closely with the local community, with other advisors, business owners, professionals and charities.
Wonderful. You mentioned the Inspire program there. So for all of the entrepreneurs listening to the podcast, what can they gain by becoming members of the program?
Oh, thank you for this opportunity. Rathbone Inspire is a program designed to support founders, business owners, and their senior leaders with connection and tools to help to grow their business. We are now a community of over 160 founders, and I'm glad to say we are growing weekly. And the community get access to peer-to-peer content, mainly delivered by entrepreneurs and investors, and also by subject matter expert. The content is mainly delivered via face-to-face events and also digitally. So there's also plenty of opportunities to connect with peers coming from all over the country. The community benefits from content which is focusing on capital raising, preparing for an exit, access to clients, grow revenue, and managing teams. That's the key focus. We are sector agnostic, although we see quite a lot of founders from the following sectors: deep tech, sustainability, healthcare, and retail. And best of all, there's no financial obligations, there's no charges, no commitment, it's not cohort-based, and every participant put in whatever they want to put in.
Sounds great. Why wouldn't you want to get involved? So where do people go to find out more?
Follow the website www.rathbonesinspire.com or contact me, Paola Cuneo. I'm easily found on LinkedIn.
Well, thanks so much for spending a little bit of time explaining all that to us. And thank you for your support.
Thank you.
This week's guest is Tom Collings. He's the founder and CEO of Calium Health. I first met Tom as a One to Watch nominee at the Cambridge Independent Science and Tech Awards back in 2019. And I remember really fondly that Tom wouldn't have photos taken just of himself. It had to be with his team and we had to run around and find everyone and get this team photo put together. But I really remember that. And he's continued that same collaborative approach ever since, which is brilliant. He is quite literally one of the nicest people you can meet in Cambridge and really cut from the same cloth as the likes of Scott White. So without further ado, let's talk to Tom. So hi, Tom. Thanks for coming on the podcast today.
Well, thanks, Faye and James. Great to be here.
And now you're a great case study because you commented on a LinkedIn post that was promoting Pam Garside's appearance on the podcast, and I immediately nobbled you afterwards. I've known you for a while, but how did that feel?
Well, fantastic. I mean, firstly, we've obviously known each other for some time, and the work that you're doing with Cofinitiv has been really great. Great to see. I've known Pam for years as well. In fact, Pam is one of the earliest supporters of Calium Health, the company that I work for. And so, yeah, it's great to be following in her footsteps.
Perfect. So we're going to come on to Calium Health, but let's find out a little bit about you first of all. Why don't you introduce yourself more formally and tell us a little bit about your background in medtech device design?
So I'm the founding CEO of a company called Calium Health based here in Cambridge. And we're really pioneering new ways to help manage kidney disease, which I'm sure we'll have an opportunity to talk about in a little while. We're really excited right now because we just entered a phase of clinical evaluation where we're testing our technology with patients. So it's really a proud moment for us.
And before Calium, you were at Cambridge Consultants?
That's right, just a stone's throw from where we are right now, actually. Back before then, actually, my training was as an engineer. And what I've come to realize since is that I'm probably more of a builder than anything else. I started out building physical products and moved on to building teams, and now I'm building a company. So I guess the building never stops.
And that's a great segue. So I believe you co-founded Calium Health with Fiona Carrot. Why don't you tell us about how you met and the kind of foundation story of the business?
Yeah, sure. Well, I actually founded the company together with three amazing women back in 2018. And now 5 and a bit years on, I think we're still something of a dream team, really. And we're really combining medical insight and scientific innovation. And these sort of things don't happen by accident, I guess. It's perhaps a Cambridge thing. You're right that 5 years ago, I was working on the Science Park here for Cambridge Consultants, helping startup companies create new products, particularly in the healthcare space, and always involving really cutting edge technology, something I'm passionate about. And I guess I reached a point when I was looking for new opportunities, new challenges, new things to get my teeth into. And this, actually, at the time, it coincided with the birth of my second child. So the way my mind worked, I could stop doing consultancy for a bit, have a little bit of well-needed family time, and then maybe take on a new project and start a new thing. And Cambridge is a great place for that. There's a fantastic quote, I think it's by Andy Richards, one of our investors, who says, Cambridge is a low-risk place to do high-risk things. And I certainly feel that that's really the case. So I heard about this student project at Cambridge University run by Amy Weatherup called iTeams. And essentially that term, there was a team of researchers from Cambridge University trying to figure out if they could develop some technology to help people with kidney disease manage their health much better. And I thought, that's interesting. My experience could be really useful potentially. So I volunteered some of my time to see if I could support that. And I guess what I realized pretty quickly was the opportunity to have a big impact in this disease area was really too compelling to ignore. So together with my now three co-founders from the university, we formed the company Calium Health.
Right. So you kind of first got involved pre-company when it was just more of a conceptual idea, or was it like research at that stage?
Yeah, no, totally. Yeah. The idea stage.
Right.
Fiona, in her clinic at the hospital, had identified this huge clinical gap around helping patients manage their health, manage their risk, manage their diet and so on at home as part of their ordinary lives. Mm. No one was there for them in kidney disease. No one was providing technology and tools and ways to help them. And she rightly thought, well, you know, we should be doing better. You know, why isn't this possible? And she teamed up with my other two co-founders, Tanya and Liz, to develop some core technology. When I met them, they were exploring whether there's any wider need for this in the world, whether there could be a market opportunity, and there undoubtedly is.
So Tom, can you tell us a little bit more about that opportunity then? You know, this is a significant issue, isn't it? And it is a global issue.
You're absolutely right. It is a huge issue. So kidney disease is something that affects 800 million people around the world. It's devastating to live with, but it's also hugely costly as well. Costly to healthcare systems, costly to patients themselves. I read a statistic recently that says that just in the US alone, they spend over $2 billion every week managing kidney disease. So it's a huge problem, and it's a really growing problem. So our vision is that anyone living with this condition can have access to the real-time health data that they need to manage their risk and help them lead the best possible life. And we recognize that people with kidney disease are particularly at risk of electrolyte imbalances. So electrolytes are something that are essential to normal bodily function, but if your levels go out of range, too high or too low, then you can get some quite serious problems. In fact, high levels of electrolytes can actually lead to death. And the catch is that in kidney disease, your kidneys are no longer doing the job of regulating those levels. So as you're consuming electrolytes like potassium and sodium and so on in your body, those are building up and up and up to potentially dangerous levels. But right now, there's nothing people can do about it. There's no way to measure that, no way to be able to manage that risk through changing what people eat or the medications they're taking or getting the care they need at the right time. So that's where we come in. We're developing technology which will allow people to be able to measure their blood electrolyte levels anywhere they are at any time so they can really manage that risk.
And so if they didn't have that, it would be popping down to the doctors or something and doing a urine test, blood test. And then by the time that they're actually doing that, they've probably already got a problem. So what you're doing is coming in advance and more preventative, right?
Yeah, that's absolutely the case. Right now, if you need to know your blood electrolyte levels, you would have to travel from your home into a clinic. You'd have to hold out your arm. A clinician would stick a needle in your arm and draw out a tube of blood. That blood has to be transported to some lab, which, if you're in a hospital, could be in the basement. If you're in your doctor's surgery, it's likely to be off-site. So the doctor doesn't get those results there and then. They only get them perhaps the next day, perhaps later that week. And the patient often never gets the results at all. So that really misses any opportunity to use that information in a timely way to be able to give people the right medications that they need and be able to monitor their risk.
So I think that's a good segue then, Tom, to talk about the actual product itself. You know, what actually have you developed in terms of the hardware and software?
So the product we're developing is what we call the Calium Personalized Blood Potassium Monitor. And what this is it's a little handheld device that can live either in the doctor's office or in the patient's home. And that will allow somebody to get a readout for their blood potassium level there and then. And the way it works is we take one drop of blood from the fingertip, and that goes onto a little test strip, which is a little tiny component that's inserted into a handheld monitor. And then within a minute, the patient will get that result, which is important to them because that means they can take action there and then to be able to manage their health. You know, that could be as simple as changing the food that they eat to cut out foods with high potassium, for example. It could be that their doctor has asked them to take particular medications in response to that to be able to manage that risk. And actually, if their levels are out of range and if they are at risk, then they know that's the time to get some emergency treatment.
Okay. So the data that's kind of returned, that's intended for the actual patient rather than it's just transmitted to the GP or the doctor. It's actually to enable like action to be taken immediately.
Well, you raised a really good point because, of course, alongside giving a single result to the patient, we do get data.
Yeah.
And that data is wonderful because that's not only helpful for the patient to be able to track their condition over time and learn about how they can control that through the changes they're making, but also, of course, we can feed that back to a healthcare professional.
Yeah.
So suddenly a doctor will be able to have this real-time information available to them without having to call the patient back every week or every month or frankly not frequently enough to have this blood test.
Okay. And you know, you mentioned this monitor and this like prick test. So is that a bespoke piece of hardware right now, or you know, are you using a smartphone to do that? How does that work?
No, it is bespoke, and that's because it has to be highly accurate. Mm-hmm. So we need to make sure that every result that our product gives is accurate, because potentially a clinical decision is going to be based on that. Mm. So in our lab in North Cambridge, we have a prototype scale manufacturing facility where we're making these tests every day. We have a team of scientists and engineers and technicians who are going through that manufacturing process and that testing process to really prove out the technology and demonstrate that it's accurate and rapid, but also low cost, which is important.
Mm. So in the market at the moment, obviously, is the personal monitor. I'm thinking back to an earlier episode that we had with Heartfelt Technologies, different marketplace. I don't know if you know them, but you know, they have this huge AI platform at the back of it. Do you have plans for doing something like that, where you can use the data not just immediately and for the clinician, but on a much more informative basis?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole world right now is talking about AI, and AI is so pervasive, it's creeping into everything that we are doing too. And going back to what you were saying, James, about data, of course, once you have data, then you can start to bring in AI, and you can start to, for example, correlate somebody's changing potassium levels with the food that they've been eating or the medications they've been taking recently, how well they've been adhering to that or other changes that they're making. So yeah, hugely important to be able to bring in those sort of insights.
And would you be able to kind of move to some kind of predictive model as well, based on what you're saying from that previous data set?
Well, that's the future. That's what everybody wants to get to. Yeah. So generation one of our products will be what I just described. As we get that into the market, as doctors and healthcare systems start to adopt this more widely, then we'll be able to move through into a format which is perhaps more continuous, more accessible. There are lots of opportunities for us to tie in with other platforms, other technologies to provide this data. So just really exciting future.
What kind of volumes are you working with at the moment?
Let's start with the blood, because that's tiny. You know, we're talking about less than 2 microliters of blood, which really is like a pinhead size. So that's tiny. And if we scale it up to patients, right now we are running a clinical study in the UK where we're recruiting 100 patients to be able to collect some real-world feedback about the way that the test performs, to be able to learn from that. And those results will be available in the spring of 2024. And if you talk about the target population, the market for this product, well, that's many millions of people. That's, you know, 2 million people on kidney dialysis that really are at high risk between dialysis sessions. That's tens of millions of people with advanced kidney disease that are at this risk and have no way to be able to manage it right now. It's many, many tens of millions of people taking medications for high blood pressure and heart failure that also interfere with potassium levels. So really, we have these big opportunities ahead of us.
If you are a startup looking to grow in Cambridge, the Bradfield Centre offers a range of flexible membership packages which put you in control of your office and home working mix. There's a vibrant, collaborative atmosphere, on-site cafe, plenty of green outside space, and regular member social events. We also offer a range of high-quality meeting spaces for hire and for tech event organisers. Our auditorium, Lakeside Pavilion and atrium spaces are perfect to bring your communities together for in-person and hybrid events. For more information, visit bradfieldcentre.com or call 01223 919 600.
So I think I'm right in saying you describe yourself as a med tech startup then. Cambridge is obviously, you know, got a high density of med tech initiatives underway. Was it always a natural choice to be based in Cambridge? And what's your view of the current med tech sector?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? Because having come through COVID, we've seen this increased attention in med tech. And I think that's really raised interest in the sort of things that we're doing. And medical technology is really one of those industries that's always advancing. It hasn't necessarily experienced the roller coaster of hype and possibly disillusionment that we've seen with some things like cryptocurrency and blockchain. And I think AI will probably go through that to an extent. Medical technology is something that's a growth opportunity and it's relatively predictable.
And you mentioned there, Tom, that you've got early manufacturing in Cambridge, which is interesting. So, you know, as you scale the business and the demand scales, do you see manufacturing staying local, or how are you going to tackle that?
Yeah, it's very interesting. Part of the reason we're manufacturing in Cambridge is because at this prototype scale, we really need close control over the technology. It's novel. It's taken some time to get it in a place that we're happy with. So we need to stay close to it. But actually, right now, we are in the process of scaling that up with external manufacturers overseas to be able to get the volumes that we're looking for. So right now, we're even at prototype scale, we're making around 15,000 test strips every week that we are making, QCing and testing. So that proves out the manufacturing process. We're able to scale that up with external manufacturers to really get the cost down and the volumes up.
And you're doing all that from your shiny newish office from your premises just around the corner from here?
That's right. We're based at the Future Business Centre in the north of Cambridge, alongside some really inspirational companies working in clean tech and med tech and all sorts of things. And there we have our manufacturing facility and our laboratory, which is ours. It's bespoke to us. And we've really set that up so that we can do the kind of creative science that we like to do. Because, of course, once we scale this product up, we've got a long pipeline of new products, new technology that we're also working to bring through.
And Calium Health itself is an inspirational company. I see you were recently listed as a leader in the global home potassium monitoring devices space in a report by Fairfield Market Research. That kind of takes me on to the next question, which is, what are you going to be looking to do next? You know, are you looking at partnerships? Where are you on your... Let's do partnerships first, and then we can come back to funding.
Yeah, certainly. So our key focus is on getting our first products into hospitals and clinics and ultimately into the hands of patients. And we will do that through partnerships. We're in discussions with several partners right now about bringing our products into their clinical trials, into their clinical services. So that will be very exciting for us. And actually, our launch point will be in America, because we can simply start selling there quicker than we can in the UK NHS. Obviously, the NHS is front of mind for us, and we're really trying to get into the NHS, but actually, we've got some near-term opportunities in America that are pretty attractive.
So that, again, is similar to the conversation with Seamus and Ariane at Heartfelt, you know, in terms of they're going over to the US first for that same reason.
Yeah, that is interesting. I mean, maybe I'll come back and ask another question about the US and how you're going to break into that market. But obviously, with a med tech business, it's a very different time to market, very different process that you go through compared to, say, a software startup. Can you talk a little bit about the kind of backers that you have, the kind of investors in the business, and the more patient style of capital that you need to bring something like this to market?
Yeah, well, the two go hand in hand, I guess. So you're right, the medtech market is perhaps different to some others, but it is a growth market and it's growing predictably. And going back to what I was saying about America, that's a really good case in point where that situation is changing. I think they've realized that their frankly ridiculous healthcare spend is just unsustainable. And now they're rapidly moving towards this system, which they call value-based care, which aligns everyone's incentives around reducing overall costs. So that aligns perfectly with our approach of providing patient-centric technology to keep people healthy at home, avoid those costly hospital admissions. So there are these kind of industry-wide changes which are going on right now, which directly supports what we're doing. And that's what our investors are excited about as well. So the sort of investors that we have right now have been investors that like technology and they see huge opportunity and they see a strong team and they want to back that. And those investors have been local. That's probably a Cambridge thing. The fact that we've had backing from Cambridge Angels, and it's just fantastic to hear two chairs of Cambridge Angels have been on the podcast recently, Simon Thorpe and Pam Garside, who are both investors. And we have backing from the likes of Jonathan Milner and some local funds like Martlet Capital and so on. So that has really helped us in those early days of getting the technology started. We're ready to raise our next investment into the business this year. So we do this in stages as we move our technology through into commercialization. So we've got opportunities open for new professional investors to come in and join us and hopefully share in the rewards. So really open to conversations if anyone wants to know more about that.
So going back to your point about the US market, talk us through your kind of approach there, because I get that'd be interesting, I think, to a lot of founders listening to the podcast. And we actually have a pretty sizable audience in the US as well. You know, are you doing that with support from the investors? Are you kind of remotely servicing the US from the team in Cambridge? Or are you looking to hire in the US and establish like a sales office out there? What's your approach?
Well, we have one foot either side of the pond. So our chief technology officer, Tanya Hutter, is based in Austin, Texas, which gives us a really good landing pad in the US. But also we have other US representation. So we're delighted to recruit onto our board Randy Kellogg last year, who is the CEO of Omron Healthcare, who are the global leaders in remote blood pressure monitoring. I think every GP surgery in the UK probably has an Omron blood pressure monitor. And he's also been instrumental in the growth of another really exciting medtech startup called AliveCor in the US, who are developing credit card sized heart monitors. So he has really a wealth of commercial experience and experience of launching new medical devices onto the market, developing products that are patient facing and clinician facing. So we have that sort of expertise, and we've done a lot of work in the US around getting ready to go to market there.
That's right. So very targeted appointments and focusing on the right kinds of people on the other side of the Atlantic.
Yeah, we have to do that because, you know, Cambridge is great for developing the technology, but ultimately we need a home for that technology. And the opportunities for us, the approaches that we have from potential partners are all coming from the US.
Interesting.
So bringing us back to Cambridge, you're a very active person within the Cambridge community. Do you want to tell us a little bit about the things that you've done? I know I bumped into you at a Cambridge Angels summer party, I think the year before, and you were busy talking to someone about 21 to Watch. So I'm like, I'll just leave Tom to talk about it. That's absolutely fine. You know, and you're regularly out there supporting other people. How have you found the whole ecosystem?
Well, the expressions in there that go something like, it takes a village to raise a child. And I think the same is true when you're starting a company. And Cambridge is that village. And the remarkable thing about Cambridge is that everybody is so generous with their time and their advice and their introductions. And we've benefited from that. So in our earliest days, you know, we had support from the Cambridge Judge Business School, which is a real melting pot of ideas and mentorship. And we were part of an accelerator at Babraham, which was particularly impactful for us. We met some of our first investors there, and we were working alongside several other similar companies that really helped us get started. And of course, the network is important as well. You know, we talked about some of the investors that have supported us locally. And I know, Faye, from your work with Cofinitiv, that Cambridge just is full of these great personalities and these great networks that really help each other.
Yeah. And you just mentioned Judge Business School then. You've kind of gone full circle because you were there getting the help. And now I believe you've just used the venture program to actually get some of those MBA students to come in and help you.
Yeah, that was a really neat fit. So we worked with a team from the MBA class last year who came to work with us for a couple of months and helped us develop our commercial strategy. Really great to be able to have those fresh ideas and that extra expertise into the team.
And I believe, Tom, this is your first CEO role, is that right? So, I mean, would you mind sharing some of what have been your lessons? What have been your learnings, your tips? What would you share with the listeners?
Yes, certainly. I guess my number one lesson would be just do it. I think life's too short to watch from the sidelines. And if you don't put yourself out there, you'll never know whether something could be successful. So that's something I've certainly realized. I think another point I would make would be, you know, bring others along on the journey. I think diverse perspectives are a really good way of spotting new opportunities. And it's also important to think about the other people around us as well. Going slightly off topic, I'm a strong supporter of initiatives that are trying to close this huge divide we have within Cambridge between people that do have all these opportunities I've just spoken about and those that don't yet. And I think all businesses should be mindful of that. I think you had Form the Future on your podcast recently, and they're a fantastic example of an organisation that's really working to bring together both sides of Cambridge. And I guess final learning from me would be that the business is a people game. So people do business with people. And it's really important to develop these broad networks and deep friendships. And I think it's important to really just talk and share stories just like we're doing today.
Fantastic.
That's great. Thank you so much for coming on and sharing your updates with us, Tom. It's been great to see you.
Always a pleasure.
Today's show was produced by Carl Homer of Cambridge TV and supported by our media partner, Business Weekly. The Cambridge Tech Podcast is available on all major podcast platforms and on cambridgetechpodcast.com. If you've enjoyed this podcast, please give it a 5-star review. It will really help others discover the show.
The rules of business and society have changed, and Mish Kondureya stands at the forefront of this change, championing the innovation ecosystem at the heart of Cambridge. Our expertise is advising innovative companies at all stages of their life cycle. Discover what you can do at mishkon.com.
Abbey People is a vibrant community charity working in Abbey Ward, Cambridge, an area that's in the top 20% most deprived in the UK. The reality for people living in Abbey is that life is hard. People struggle to make ends meet. Abbey People, together with volunteers, is providing support and companionship while walking alongside people as neighbours. Find out more at abbeypeople.org.uk.